need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Frazier, we've got Rebecca Maxwell on the board. We've got JP in studio. We've got a great night planned. George, I want to talk a little bit about perseverance because it does imply a process of growing, doesn't it? It requires sacrifice and not immediate gratification. Perseverance strengthens our muscles of patience and endurance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's smirking at me.
No, I hear
you
the
bug me sometimes.
I try
like you
to.
You would not believe.
I do. This is perseverance right here
right
with
now
me.
It is.
Yeah. When I hear the word perseverance,
yes.
That's right up there with homework, exercise. But it's true. And for most of us, we want immediate gratification.
Yes. And when I think about, there's a certain Chinese bamboo tree. You can water it and fertilize it. But this particular tree, 4 years, nothing happens. Nothing comes out of the ground. But after 4 years, it sprouts, and the next 6 weeks, it grows to 90 feet. Does that mean the first 4 years were useless? Of course not. So the plant experienced tremendous development in the root system. In the fifth year, it grew to be 90 feet. So I think that's kind of a cool illustration of how when we come to faith in Christ, we got to put our root system down first. We have to continue to persevere. And I think in recovery, perseverance, as much as you don't like that word, it's a pretty important word.
Well,
there you go,
George Frazier. I didn't like recovery for a long time either. You know, that's the deal. When I hear perseverance, Bill, I look at steps 11 and 12. And in 11, you know, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Now the perseverance part comes in that we went through the first 10 steps to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've done is take the wreckage of ourselves and try to put it away. When I look at the big recovery book that's blue, I look at that as a manual for me, Christianity 101 for dummies, to take what I know in the Bible and really to follow Jesus. And what I mean by that, people might go, really? Yeah, because it says that our drinking is but a symptom. Our problem is we're self-centered, egocentric. And when I look at the Bible and I look at the first commandment is you shall have no other gods before me, what we're doing is putting ourselves in front of God. And so when I read the book, it ties in with me what Jesus said, pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. And it gives me a pattern, Bill, to do that. Very interesting to me about the bamboo tree in mm-hmm. that it ties in with recovery in that a lot of us go, okay, I quit drinking. I've been sober 30 days. I want this, this, and this. And most people give up and go back to their old way because they're not getting a return on their investment very quickly. We want what we want. We want it right now, mm-hmm. and I want a lot of it.
So in Colossians 3, I think it starts in verse 15. It says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom. So in order to teach and admonish one another, you have to have the word of Christ dwell in you richly, which means you have to spend time in it, putting down your root system as you're trying to grow in your faith.
I like that.
I do too.
And the meditation, sought through prayer and meditation. Meditation is focusing on God's word. Tim Keller, the book you gave me, and you actually bought it for me when it was in hardcover. You didn't wait for paperback, so
right.
I got to thank you for that. Talks about there's meditation, but most people meditate on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get a thought or this. We'll meditate on Scripture because what I want to do is be transformed by the renewing of my mind that comes by spending time in the Word.
Why would you want to focus on you, the sinner, when you could focus on Him, the Savior?
Well, that's it.
That's the bonus round.
It is. And that's the question of the day. But the problem is we only go to Him when our way doesn't work, when we exhaust ourselves of ourselves.
And it says also, and whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. So let's always have a spirit of gratitude in our heart. I think people in recovery, they wake up, they're grateful they're not using, but are they grateful and giving thanks to God for all that is being done in them through Him?
And what happens is that pink cloud can fade. One of the biggest things that I see is people, we go to Ephesians, and once again to Tim Keller, you got to put off the old, but you have to put on the new, too. And most people are really good at putting off the old, but then after 3 months, they haven't put on the new. And that takes us into step 12.
Mm-hmm.
Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, if you do the steps, you will get a spiritual awakening, because basically what you're doing is realizing that there's nothing good in you, that there is a power greater than you that can restore you to truth. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, the light. No life, no one comes to the Father except through the Son. Step 3, we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to Him. Then you do your inventory, Bill, on how you stack up. And a quick way to do that is read the Ten Commandments and see how you're doing. Most of us don't even know there's 10. We can say there is, but we can't tell you what they are. If you don't know what they are, you don't know if you're breaking them right or not. Then you go on and ask for forgiveness. And 5, look at your defects of character. Try to have God remove them. Make reparations. Do a daily inventory. Seek, as we said in 11, spend time in the Word seeking God's will. Then having had the spiritual awakening, you practice these principles in all your affairs. You carry the message to others. But practicing that in all your affairs, Bill, means you're a new person. If any man be in Christ, he's a new creation. You walk this out. And I love the bamboo tree in that you might not see this for a while. It's kind of like The Wizard of Oz. The movie's in black and white, and then mm-hmm. the color comes on. Don't quit before the miracle.
All right. It's almost, George, like you are impersonating a radio professional today. I'm just saying.
I'm not a professional at anything.
That's true.
The drunk guy shows up this evening. And you know what's really a miracle to me? How light it is later in the day.
Thank you. That's a sign of spring.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue in step 12, George. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Look to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Explain.
One of the good things about the recovery movement that I see that's different than church, I think Christians have a tendency to shoot their wounded. And in the recovery rooms, everybody is there and realizes their brokenness, because that's why you're there. And that gentle part. Bill, we work with guys, Salvation Army. I go to Redemption House, and I see guys come back. And the hardest thing to do after you mess up is to acknowledge it and humble yourself and come back. And gently, we let them know they're loved and lift them up. I had 3 treatments. I didn't get sober.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so bad about myself and so ashamed about myself. And there were people there that loved me enough to tell me the truth, but let me know that if I prayed for forgiveness to God, that I would be forgiven and restored. And we need to do that in a gentle way, because you're hurting when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to let people know, you know, that's why I go to church. I'm broken.
Mm-hmm.
But God enables us, if we humble ourselves, to exalt us and let, you know, we get lifted up with Him to show other people that God is great. We're going to exalt God, not ourselves, but He lets us do that with Him.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a neat deal if you humble yourself.
George, when you went through the steps, did you find that you were enjoying a new freedom and a new happiness?
Yes.
Okay.
And you're referring to the promises that come after step 9.
Some of the benefits.
I still work the steps, Bill. I say the 3rd-step prayer, 7th-step prayer. Try to do that daily. And I wake up in the morning, and it talks about in the recovery book, about upon awakening, we turn our thoughts to God. I pray for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober before I get out of bed every day. Now, mm-hmm. the last year and a half, I've also prayed for, please heal me of the cancer. But for me, the only way I can stay sober is to go to Him right away, because mm-hmm. George's head starts right mm-hmm. away.
So I want you to know tonight that as you work through the steps, and that if you can sink your roots into God's Word, beyond the shadow of a doubt, He will never leave you or forsake you. So no matter what you see or what you hear or what you think or what you feel or what you experience, God is going to be there for you. He will never leave you or forsake you. George, we're on a roll tonight. I think we should just skip our guest. What are your thoughts?
He's pretty big, and I think okay. He drove a long way to get here. I'm looking forward, as I know you are, to
let's put
JP.
Him on. Let's put him on. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be back with JP, our in-studio guest. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George is in the house tonight. We'll be right back.
Softly now, owe it to the world, and everyone knows that you're...
right, we are back. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. Recovery through Christ, my very favorite subject. If you are suffering with an addiction of any kind, you want to put your roots down into Christ. And that makes me so happy I could break into song, but you do not want to hear me sing. George, introduce our guest.
Our guest tonight is from Dallas, Texas. His name's JP. JP, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We know JP through our friend John Leonard at Redemption House. You were raised in a Christian home, is that correct?
Yeah, more of my mom. My dad had grown up in the church, but just never really continually went or kind of soaked in what was being said. Mm-hmm. I was about the same way. I was kind of made to go a little bit, but if I didn't want to go, then it was all right.
I heard that expression, unequally yoked. I'm wondering if that isn't something that maybe your parents had a little bit of. Were they unequally yoked? Dad didn't really want to go to church. Mom did?
Kind of, sort of, because I'm half Japanese. My mom's full Japanese, and my dad was white, and we grew up in Mississippi. It was like growing up, church was pushed upon
you.
And so and anything that's forced upon you, if you don't want it, it's kind of going to take a little different take. I never went in depth or really listened to what was being said and wasn't really paying attention. So it was kind of just a body being there. And that was about it.
You had other things on your mind?
Hmm?
Did you have other things on your mind?
Not really. I mean, at that young age, I'm not really knowing what to think about. I'm just kind of waiting, okay, when is this over and I can go play and go have fun with my friends. And I mean, knowing now, I wish I would have paid attention. But I think that's like that with anything, even with school. It's like, oh, man, if I knew then what I know now, it'd be a little bit different. But, I mean, everything happens for a reason, and I don't regret anything. Mm-hmm. So,
go ahead, George.
Well, how old were you when you first started experimenting with marijuana or cigarettes or alcohol?
Cigarettes, I waited till I was 18. Same thing with weed. It wasn't I was searching for something else. It was more of a, okay, this is what the older kids are doing. Let's give it a shot. And nothing really took until I was about 21.
Okay, let's back up here. So you went through school without using, high school, and were you getting good grades and stuff?
Not awesome, but, I mean, I was taking school somewhat seriously. Mm-hmm. I wasn't constantly skipping out. I would do everything was needed of me, and I guess just wasn't pursuing anymore. I was just doing enough to maintain, and that was about it for me. So, using wasn't really bad. I mean, it was a good school, but once you start kind of hanging around with different crowds, it's like, okay, what's out there? Let's give it a shot. Let's do this together. So
it's going to be like the bamboo tree. There's nothing going on.
No,
here,
no. All of a sudden. It's like parents, though, that said when you were growing up, I don't want you hanging around with that George Fraser boy.
Yeah, they said that to me.
I think they still say that.
Yeah. So were you playing ball or anything in school?
Yeah, I got into baseball. That was my main thing. And my mom was more of the protective type. She didn't want me into football, anything aggressive. So I guess baseball was the less strenuous one that I could do. So I would cling. Yeah, let's go. That's great. And stuck with that. My dad was he was a country boy too. So I grew up fishing and hunting, and I really liked doing that. And I could say baseball was my main sport. Never took it any further, you know, in middle school and high school. It was just kind of a extracurricular activity I was doing, and that was it. I wasn't really pursuing any other different hobbies or anything.
So when you got out of high school, what way did your life go?
At that point, I really didn't like school. It wasn't to a point where I was bored or anything. I actually went to summer school to knock out some of my English credits. So my senior year, I could actually get out at, I think it was like 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And I was more of the wanting to get money. And so I started working early, and I kind of liked – I actually liked it. I wish I would have gone back to school a little bit earlier, kind of like, okay, in the senior year I can do a little bit more. But, just my priorities kind of got a little bit screwed up at that time.
Okay. So you get out of high school, and you didn't use till you were 20?
Yeah, I kind of experimented with weed. It just – I didn't really care for the feeling at that time. And then when 21 hit was when I kind of started doing drinking. My dad was an alcoholic, and I saw how bad that was. And he wasn't really bad through my childhood. It was more earlier in my childhood that I kind of don't remember. And then he started back up when I was about 13 or 14. And I just kind of saw that, and I didn't want that for my life. And not that I was doing it out of hate and didn't love him. I just saw that what it can do to you, and I didn't want that for me.
Was there some resentment? Was your dad less present in your life because he was drinking?
A little bit more. Like, early on, you can't really tell. Once you start hitting 13 or 14, I was like, okay, man, he's drunk.
Showing up to baseball games or skipping those?
During that time, it was good. It was more of a... I didn't want to be around him anymore, so I started hanging out with my friends other than that. And my mom was continually going to Al-Anon. I went with her a couple times, but at that time I didn't know what addiction was. I just saw it as, man, why can't you stop? I love you. I'm doing what I can on my part. Why aren't you doing yours? And so there was a little bit of resentment.
Okay.
You're still going to church. So this seems pretty normal to me at this stage.
So far, so
I hope things turn here. No offense, or this is a bad show. You know.
Oh well, we'll get to I can dip into the using part.
Yeah. So yeah. What changed?
I guess the using part. So I started working with the city of Richardson back home in the water department, and that was like right after high school. So I just loved the money, loved the work. And a few years into that, I had an accident where a tractor actually crushed both my hands, the middle and ring finger on both my hands.
Ouch.
So I was out of commission for about a year. I had about three surgeries, and that's when I started getting hooked on pain meds. I mean, the pain meds were there for the pain, and I just loved that feeling, that euphoric feeling. You know, I wanted more of that. So I wasn't searching for anything else. And I was like, okay, sweet. I don't have to drink. It's either drinking or pills. I wasn't really a big drinker. So sweet. I can get the same sensation out of these pills, and I'm prescribed it. So if anybody asks, you know, it's legit. I have, I need them for my hands.
You felt a little justified using them, didn't you?
Yeah. After a few months.
Oh, I get my drugs from a doctor.
Right. Right. You can't criticize me.
And if you have health insurance, they're paid for.
My fingers were crushed.
He was
cut
working.
Cut me some slack.
He was working. Yeah. You got an attitude tonight.
I do.
Yeah. The bamboo thing has changed in Bill Arnold's life.
You started off with that smirk at me.
I have a smirk.
But I haven't been able to get over that tonight.
Yeah, you've never gotten over that smirk. So, but this is kind of interesting to me. Normally, guys start using
me
what?
Too.
13?
Yeah.
And this guy's normal till he gets hurt, and he's working, and he gets hurt on work. I guess the thing that tells me, guys, is this can happen to anybody at any time.
No
Satan
kidding.
Roars around like a lion and looking for somebody to devour. So were you able to go back to work, and did this incorporate into your life, and did you keep a lid on it for a while?
So I was out a year, and then after about 6 or 7 months – off of workman's comp, if I wasn't able to do my full job, then, you know, I couldn't come back. So I came back and did light duty for like 2 or 3 months, couldn't return back. And finally, after that year, I was able to come back. So I started doing the same work, but being around the tractor kind of freaked me out a little bit. So I transferred over to another department. My tolerance went up, and I just noticed I'm taking more pills, and started going to a pain management doctor, which prescribed more. And once I figured out that loophole, it was crazy. I mean, it kind of snuck up on me a lot quicker than I thought it would be. And I mean, the whole time thinking I don't have a problem, I can control it, it's okay. I'm using that as a crutch that it's okay because the doctor prescribed it to me. And I mean, throughout the whole deal, I've had great friends and families that's cared about me, but a lot of times we're worried about your feelings, and we don't want to come out and say you have a problem. So we'll mention it a little bit. Are you still taking the pills? And I'm quick to say, just get off my back. No, I'm still taking them, but not as much. But you don't know how much I'm taking because I have the bottle myself.
Were you taking them as needed?
I mean, at first, and then after that, it started getting to the point where, okay, I got a month's supply, and after a few months, I'm calling the doctor for an early refill. I'm done with them in 2 weeks. The next couple months, I'm done in a week. I'm giving them away so I don't have them, and then I'm getting to the point where I'm taking them on, then I'm buying more, and it's just...
Where were you buying more?
Just from other friends. Actually, one of my buddies turned me on to a pain management doctor, and we were kind of offsetting each other. Okay, well, you're going back at this time. Sweet, I'll throw you this many, and then you hit me back, and it was vice versa. And then after a while, that point went away. I was like, I can't even give you anymore because that's taking it away from me. Pretty much, if you want to find something, you're going to find it, or a lot of times it's going to find you. And I think that's the scarier part when you're trying to search for it. But that's why you don't have to search anymore. It's coming to you. And just going down that road is scary.
How long were you able to get prescriptions for this?
I kept up with it for about 2 or 3 years on that. And then I ended up getting fired from the city and then was on Cobra insurance for about a year. So this was all me paying out of pocket. But, I mean, to be able to sell the pills, I could have more than enough money to go see him and get filled. So, but well, I mean, without a job at the time, then I've got no money to support my habit and take care of my responsibilities. But my responsibilities kind of went out the window, and my only drive for money was to support my habit.
So how did you do that?
At a point, it was, you know, selling the pills or selling other drugs. And then before you know it, I'm getting rid of all my stuff in the house. I'm going to pawn shops because they don't ask questions and they give you money. And I would find odd and end jobs, just wasn't going through a career or anything. It was just enough to maintain. And I knew in my head I wanted more, but I didn't want to put in the work to do it. So once these easy jobs just threw in my lap, well, okay, I'm fine with it. And we'll see. A year later goes by and, you know, I'm still doing the same thing. And
is there any accountability in your life right now, JP? Do you have your mom or dad saying, so JP, what are you doing for work nowadays?
No, well, my dad passed away when I was 20.
Okay,
my mom's still around.
That.
Oh, no, yeah. It's fine. I mean, at a point, that kind of hurt because the alcoholism did kill him. And to see how addiction was, I didn't understand it until it comes around to me. And I was like, oh, crap, now I see exactly what you're talking about. I mean, the pills and the addiction is way more important than anything else in the world. It got to a point my mom actually got one of my friends and they confronted me on it, and that was just a huge weight that was lifted off my chest, and no more lies or anything like that. There is accountability on myself. It's good when I call back home and I talk to my mom. I was like, I'm doing great. I'm talking to other people and still I'm actually looking into wanting to do counseling and talking to others through addiction. And I feel that, you know, my 10 years of using, I have some kind of like street cred that I can use to reach other people that others cannot. So I'm going to try to use that.
Yeah, I hate to say this to our listeners, but we have to take a break. But we'll be right back with JP. Thanks for listening tonight to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we have Rebecca on the board tonight, and we are having a great conversation that will continue in just a couple minutes.
But I continue learning. I never meant to do those things to you.
We are back. I bet you took a lot of short breaths waiting for this to return, because this conversation is so interesting. George, we have JP in studio, and his story is quite fascinating.
It's different.
It is different.
I know JP, and I didn't know your story, and it didn't have the typical setup.
Do you vet our guests?
I vet the co-host is what I do. No, normally we have guys on, and I was great, and I was playing baseball, and then when I was 15 or 13.
Yeah.
We didn't have that here, and I think one of the really good things that I'm getting out of the program is that you can have a pretty normal life and get hurt at work.
No and kidding. All of a sudden, now you're hooked on Oxy.
Yeah, and I don't want to withdraw on this. How long did you stay on this from the initial work accident?
So right after I got hurt, that was about 2004, I believe, and the whole span of about a 10-year span is when – I think I had kicked the pills for maybe a week was the longest. That was me just trying to wean off. But just,
how's the withdrawal on that?
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I mean, I'd just get the sweats and the aches. Just all my thoughts were on how am I going to get more pills. I wouldn't want to do anything with anybody. I was just miserable, and I didn't want to be around people. But once I got that fix, it was like, okay, now I can go do everything. It's great. And just that whole vicious cycle was killing me, and it was more of a I didn't want to go through the withdrawal, so I'm constantly going to get more, and I kept telling myself, when are you going to try to get help? And so I ended up getting on Suboxone, which is a blocker, and even though taking pills on top of that's not going to do anything for you, I would still try to take more Oxycontin and more Norcos, and it just wasn't working. So if I couldn't get the pills, then I started switching to Xanax, and then I went to Ecstasy, and it just got to a point I was just searching for that feeling, that euphoric feeling, and I'm going to find it in something, in a pill, and just I wasn't reaching out. I really wasn't, and people were trying to reach out to me, but I kept saying, no, I don't have a problem. It's a pride thing. I was trying to kick it myself, and it just wasn't working out.
How was your connection to Jesus at this time?
I never really had. Even growing up, I knew the stories and a little bit, but I never depth into that. Once I actually found Jesus, so I heard about this place, Redemption House, up here, and my thoughts, like, okay, well, comparing it to other treatment places, and this is my first anything, any detox, anything like that. And they said, well, it's a gospel-based treatment center. And I was like, you know what? I've tried so-called kicking it myself. That's not working. This is a kind of kill two birds with one stone. It's going to help with your sobriety, and it's also going to help with other troubles that are coming into your life. So I just humbled myself and threw my arms up. I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. Let's see how it goes. And that was October of 2016. So, yeah, I've been up here a little over a year and a half now. And I did my 90-day treatment there. And this is something I just don't want to rush back into. I mean, this is my life. I don't want to be the ones that are saying, like, this is my third or fourth treatment, man. This is my one and only, hopefully. So I will do everything I can to kind of strengthen that. And coming to the Lord was a different way of life for me, and it's been great ever since.
What is their programming? What does it entail? You walk in one day, you're from Dallas, Texas. Were you withdrawing when you got there? Or?
No, I actually sobered up at my mom's house. She took me in and said, just come live with me for a little bit, and then we'll figure out what's going on. So I went through my – it wasn't very bad withdrawals, because at that time I really wasn't taking too many of the pain meds. It was more the Xanax and – just my mind was trying to wrap around, okay, this lie is out, everything's clean, let's get your head together and figure out what's going on. So we had talked around, and I had actually talked to a psychiatrist, and one of his sons was actually in the treatment center, and talked to him a couple times, and he said, well, we've got some other treatment centers in Texas, but if you really want this to happen, I feel that, you know, you can give this place a shot in Minnesota. So I was like, okay, yeah, it sounds good to me. And so walking in, it was great. I mean, all the guys are just, you know, grabbing my bags, you know, hey, are you welcome, man? How do you feel? You're great. And that was just weird to me. I mean, I'm out of state, and these guys are just welcoming me. They don't even know me. And I felt it was really good that I sobered up 2 weeks prior, because I didn't have to worry about, you know, my thoughts going through the withdrawals. Like, okay, we're going to work. Let's get this thing started. And it was very different to me, just because any change is bad, I think. But, I mean, it was a good change, and I'm just grateful that this happened. So when we come in, it's a week of, you know, getting in the Word. And I felt at that time that I needed to read up as much as I can. I need to figure out what's going on. I have to earn this grace. I have to earn this gift that has been given to me. So I will sit there and do everything I can. And finally, one of the guys, Jason, had told me, he's like, if you keep thinking like that, you're going to be, you're going to be reading a long time. You're going to be searching a long time, and you're not going to find what you're looking for. Just mm-hmm. let him in. Let him do the work, and you will see the great gifts that he has for you and everything. So,
JP, George and me might be backwoods hillbillies, more George than me, but that euphoria.
That would be me and George.
That's why I, that's part of the joke, George.
George and I.
Yeah, it's part of the joke. But this euphoria feeling you're talking about, JP, isn't that Jesus?
Yeah, it is now. At that time, and that's what the beauty of finding that the Lord is this comfort that you're looking for. He is enough. He is more than enough. And I just knew nothing about that. And, you know, being on the pills, like this is my source of comfort. It's instant. It's helping me out. So I will continue to worship that. I will do everything in my power to get that. And well, you start getting to a point where your priority is like, okay, this is my source of comfort. This is what I'm going to do everything for. Something's going on. Something's not right. And just being on that for so long, you start losing everything else that you know, that this is all I know. And it's like, no, it's not. You know, you growing up, there is a source of comfort other than that. But so I'm glad that this place actually brought me to the Lord and that I can go to him for my source of comfort. And even being around it all the time, it's still you try to take control. I want to take the reins and control this. But everything has gone good because you have given everything to him. Why do you want to mess that up? Why do you want to change that? But that's where our mind goes. So it's like constantly go to him to put my heart in check and just constantly allow me to go to him every time.
Sounds like a transformed mind, George. You're smirking again.
No, sorry. I didn't mean to step on your joke.
That's all right.
Got to make direct amends here. Anyway, I'm wondering, did you make a decision for Christ during this time?
Yeah, I let's see.
Or did you recommit during this time?
When I first heard about this place, and it was a gospel-based place, it's going to be a lot of singing, a lot of reading, and this is just from just kind of hearing words about how Christians are, and also I never really went in depth. It was more like what the media is portraying them as. It's like mm-hmm. they're just door to door carolers and trying to spread the word of Jesus. So mixing up with everything just kind of that was pushing me away. I didn't want anything with it. And then corruption with the church. I was like, why do I want to be in that? But regardless of what like corruption happened, it's not the ones preaching it. Like they are preaching the word, and that's what you need to focus on, what is being said. So to be around the guys there, and that's what the beauty of being at Redemption House. Everybody is has this problem. They're going through this together, and it's not you. It's not you're not alone.
So the like-mindedness in the community is really helping you with your recovery and your program, and the constant feeding of God's word into your life is starting to entirely transform your mind in ways that probably are not only surprising you, but delighting you.
Yeah, and actually, so we go to church on Sundays, and we actually do a huddle group. Each one of us have a huddle group, and mine's every Saturday. So, and that's also getting more of the word of God through other guys. And some of the other guys were through Teen Challenge, so we're getting the word, and then we're also still talking about the addiction side of it. And I think that's what's really good, especially with the meetings that, opposed to just being with just a regular church group, we're with another church group that has been through addiction and understand how it is. And, you know, I've stayed sober for this long, and it's because of the grace of God that has helped me be able to do that. So I was like, cool, I want to hear more about that. How mm-hmm. are you staying sober for mm-hmm. this long? And that's why it's great when we talk to George, like, okay, you've been sober for this long. How do I continue that? Because I'll still have not bad using thoughts, but it's still, I think this, the way my mind is still wired, that it's still going to go back to, well, how do I handle that? Do I pursue that thought and keep that kind of going through my head, or you know, do I talk about it and try to lay it on my other brothers to help me out? And you know, I tend to talk to more people about it. And hey, I had this using thought, help me out. Have you had these using thoughts? And they're like, yes, we have. So it's the constantly to go to the Lord and then just go to my other brothers to help me out and constantly not take this on my own.
You know, one of the good things, Bill, you always talk about community, and we're going to have a community. It just might not be a helpful community.
Right.
We could be in a gang. We can hang around with drug users, or we can get with Christian solid guys. You know, we're going to be where we hang around. But one of the great things about Redemption House is it's 90 days minimum, Bill. And then after you graduated from that, you went on to their phase two.
Yeah. I got to a point where, you know, okay, I did my 90 days. I do want to go back to Texas, but when do I want to go back to Texas? Well, I don't really want to go unprepared. This is fairly new to me, so I don't have really responsibilities to go back. No wife and kids at the time, so I will take this opportunity to strengthen up. And since this is a totally new way of life for me, I figured, well, what's another 6 months? And so went over to the phase two house with, I believe it was six other guys were there at the time. So it was nice to be at the phase two, especially going through the program with the guys at the house. So that was a good comfort. And you know, after 6 months, you know, what's another 6 months? Mm-hmm. Still liking it up here, and my pursuit of the Lord is still a joy to me, and that's something that I don't want to ever lose. So,
excellent.
I think it's really important. You talked earlier about the bamboo plant, about we want something right away.
Mm-hmm.
And guys that wait, and we've had a lot of, you know, guests on, Brock, Baylor, UJP from Redemption House.
Jason.
The director, I can't think of his name.
Jim something.
Steve?
Yeah, something.
Okay. And I think what the deal is, the longer you're in, the better your chance coming out. And
yeah,
that's backed up statistically.
All right, stay tuned. We're going to have one more segment with JP. You're listening to Real Recovery. Awfully glad you've joined us tonight, Bill George. We'll be back in a minute. Recovery, Bill and George. George, you know the one thing I have that you don't? Show prep.
Talent.
Show prep. I was looking at my show prep, and I just show prep from the last 5 minutes, of course. And I was curious to ask JP, people that have food addictions, they still have to eat. And people that have had injuries, like JP did on the job, and he needed serious pain medication, well, there's going to be another circumstance in his life where he's going to need pain management. What's going to happen when that arises?
I'm actually glad you asked that, because at the like the question of the day, we actually had an incident with some of the guys at the other house that one actually had to have surgery and, you know, was prescribed meds. And I mean, I guess to a point you can go through it. It's whether you want to or not. And that kind of scared me for them, that I've been away from the pills so long. What is that going to feel like when I take it again? And then that frightens me all the time. And I actually, 3 weeks ago, I went to Buck Hill and was skiing, and I actually fell. And I think I fractured my rib, or at least it felt like it. And just the first thought through my head was not going to pills, which was great.
Wow.
Normally I'm like, okay, sweet, I got an injury, I've got, mm-hmm, a way in, I can do this, and it just wasn't like that. And I was actually listening to one of the podcasts, and you brought up 2 Corinthians 10:13, and that's a verse that I really care for, that there is no temptation that is too great that you will be able to endure, and he will give you a way out. And it's not a way that I want. This, you know, pain meds are like kind of the easy cop out. Like, you know what, if you actually give it a chance, you might be able to bear the pain, but it's, do you want to go through the pain? Well, no, it's not comfortable to me. I don't want that. And that's the thing about pain meds. It's not really anything that gets rid of your pain. It loops your mind and puts it elsewhere so you don't think about it. And
I did not know that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's why after I had my accident, I was like, well, you know, I'm gonna try ibuprofen for a little bit and Tylenol and see if that works. And you know, 3 weeks later, I'm still here. I'm totally fine. So it's, you know, there is always another way. It's a whether do you want to do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing.
And George, you have gone through some situations where you've needed some pain meds, and maybe you could join in on this conversation and shave a little time off the clock.
Yeah, I can stretch this out. So if you're listening, it might be a good time to go watch TV or something. No, I think this is a real problem for people in recovery. When I worked for Fairview University of Minnesota at Edina, my relapse program was all guys that had at least a year of sobriety that had gone in and had an operation. I know for me, when I had half my lung taken out and I was in the hospital for 12 days, I left on only Tylenol, which I look back on was really not well thought out because I was hurting. But I like drugs, man.
Yeah.
And my body can't tell if they're prescribed or street.
Uh-huh.
And so I always made sure Amy would be in control of the bottle because, you know, once I take them, I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard part for people is there are people that have pain the rest of their lives, and they have to manage that. And I feel so blessed, JP, that we don't have to deal with that. And I know there might come a time when I do, and I'm going to need a lot of support because when I did get the preoperative buzz going, you know, that was the highlight of my year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an addict, and I still like the feeling.
Yeah.
So we have to go to Jesus, and I like what you said about that, you know, out of Corinthians, that there always is a way out. And but it really forces us to go to the Lord, which we should anyway. And for some people, they have to live their whole life with pain management, and that's a tall order.
Mm-hmm. And what about suffering? Where does suffering come into this equation? In this life, we will have it. And, you know, should we not take some of this on and say, I guess this is what I'm dealing with right now, and I'll trust God to help me through this, and it'll bring me to my knees, versus always wanted to just wipe it out as fast as you can?
Yeah, it's...
Am I out of touch?
No. And that's the thing when we talk about...
Well, not on that.
Yeah.
Like going, praising him for the good and then praising him for the sufferings.
Mm-hmm.
To look back and I can dwell on, man, this is 10 years of my life wasted for something else. And to keep dwelling on that, it's like, no, you're alive now. What can you do now? And through those pains and sufferings, honestly, I don't know if I would have found God, or maybe it would have taken a little bit longer. So I am thankful that I was able to endure that suffering and to come out on the other end and to be able to share with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess through addiction, if that's a way to bring him to Christ, you know, that's something I know a little bit more about. And I had kind of just thought about, you know, man, I could have pursued God a lot easier, but if I didn't do this, then would I cling to him closer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I mean, from what I think now, I really don't think so. I had to go through this to find him and to constantly search for him.
And JP, didn't the suffering and enduring that build a little spiritual muscle you didn't have before?
No, oh, absolutely.
I mean, even the skiing accident where you had some pain and you decided, you know, ibuprofen was going to be the way to go, and you kind of navigated your way through that and you came out on the other side and you went, all right, there is some suffering. I didn't have total relief all the time, but I've got some spiritual muscle I've added to my life that I didn't have before.
Yeah, and it's always good to have that strength. Oh. I need strength from all different angles. And I had actually shared that with my huddle group, that my thought didn't go to wanting to use pain meds. I can use something else. And that kind of just kind of stirred him up a little bit, that like, man, that is just great that you that wasn't a thought you went to, you know, that was a thought you went to the Lord. And thank you for giving me this other way out. But a lot of times it's us, like, this is your way out. Well, I don't like that. I kind of want something else. So it's like you're kind of trying to negotiate with God, and that just doesn't work out.
George, would you process some of his thoughts? Here is an opioid addict getting back injured in pain, and his mind does not go to opioids.
It's God. It's a change. You know, we're transformed. And one of the reasons we like going to places like Redemption House is we get to see a living God take dead people and make them alive again. One of the things he has not talked about, Bill, is how much he shares the love of Christ with people that he meets at the store, with people he meets that are in addiction. JP has a real gift, and I believe one of these days he's going to become a counselor or a minister in recovery, because whenever I talk to him, that's what he talks about. And I believe that God has brought you to that. I believe he drew you to Redemption House. You've stayed there, and it seems like the one thing in his life that really, really excites him is sharing Jesus.
And JP, I bet your mother prayed for you from day one, and that this might be some of the fruits of her prayerful efforts for her son.
Yeah, and actually our other biblical counselor, Dale, when I was at Redemption House, we did our one-on-ones, and we were talking, and that was a thought that kind of went through my head with my mom that, man, if I was her, I would have given up on me a long time ago. He just, well, why did you put
you're
up
her boy.
With this?
She ain't yeah, giving
and,
up, JP,
and he and ever. He asked me, he's like, well, she's a true Christian, correct? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, do you ever think that she hasn't thought those thoughts, but do you ever think she kind of takes that to the Lord and, no, and endure this. I'm with you this whole time. And just hearing from that perspective, I was like, yeah, I never thought of it that way, that, you know, maybe he is the strength that is – been given to her to kind of put up with my crap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was real encouraging to hear. And, you know, you need to hear these words, and who are you going to hear from to kind of help you out? And it was just really great. That was a really great one-on-one that we had. So, but when you're talking about talking to other people and understanding why we're here, I've actually talked to a couple guys when I go to the gym. And interesting enough, they ask, oh, where are you from? From Dallas. Well, what brought you up here? Well, you know, addiction. I went through a treatment center. And a lot of the people that I've talked to have gone through the same things.
Wow.
And it's been really – you kind of go off of your addiction is something that's turned up the conversation, which is great. And I've never had a bad conversation with anybody. I've actually – reached out. We actually went to another AA meeting on Thursday, and I met one of the guys that was at the gym, and that was a really great opportunity. If I never said anything to him at the gym, I wouldn't have known him. So it was good to see another familiar face and that we're all going through this together. So
that's nice to hear, isn't it?
It's great. And he's taking advantage of his circles of influence, which is always a great reminder for all of us. To sort of blossom where you're planted. And if you have an opportunity to connect with people and share your story, you weren't shoving it down anyone's throat. You were just kind of saying who you are, and they responded in a like-minded way, and you then have an opportunity to say, this is why I'm being able to stay sober. It's because of Christ. It's not because of anything I'm doing.
Well, I think the other thing that can reinforce your sobriety and your walk is you see that God's been in this the whole time, and he doesn't get anybody sober without having a job for him to do, because you can speak to people that nobody else can because you've walked the walk, and that's how he prepares us. We go out on our own. He comes and draws us back in and said, I'm going to lift you up here, and you're going to do this, this, and this, but I got a job for you. It doesn't stop with you doing drugs. This has nothing to do with you doing drugs. This is everything to do about glorifying me. And that is so cool to see. Then when you think about using, which we do occasionally, you're going to go, I don't want to do that to God. You know, Joseph said with Potiphar's wife, how could I sin against God?
Mm, that's some George F. wisdom. We'll end on that note. JP, thanks for being in studio. Thanks for doing the show.
Yes, sir.
Great
Thank
to meet you,
you
and a pleasure to hear your story. That wraps up another, what I believe is an award-winning episode of Real Recovery. We're so glad you listened tonight. Tell your friends about us, and then you can go to myfaithradio.com and pass this podcast on to friends and relatives. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.